95.7 The Fan presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Pumping, Darnold in trouble, and Will Anderson has him down. The ball is out, and Will Anderson has it for a touchdown! Houston scores! The Terminator! A massive play by Will Anderson Jr.
Atta baby, Mark. It's football season. Listen to Mark, man. Can I get that one more time?
Yes! Pumping, Darnold in trouble, and Will Anderson has him down. The ball is out, and Will Anderson has it for a touchdown. Houston scores. The Terminator. A massive play by Will Anderson Jr.
What a boy, man. It's back, baby, next week.
Rock and roll, meow.
Here we go, Mark. Mark letting it rip. Mark, Andre, John coming up next week. They got it right here on 95.7 The Fan. You can hear them with that call against the Buffalo Bills. That should be fun coming up. Also, you can hear Mark and John coming up after us as well every night on Texans All Access. That's Will Anderson, 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. Jump in here. We know it has been the opposite of an offseason for Will Anderson as it was for C.J. Stroud. Will got record-setting money that he deserved. He had a hell of a season last year, finishing behind Myles Garrett, who everyone was going to in Defensive Player of the Year voting. First team All-Pro. He was he had a big-time season. But with that, as we said, he is now the highest non-quarterback, highest-paid non-quarterback in the league. And I think arguably the most beloved player here, right? I think if you start rolling through different things, I think, well, Nico always gets hurt. We understand how CJ has become polarizing, right? There's some other guys, but I feel like Will Anderson is the guy that everybody, you say his name, they smile, that they have.
He's on that J.J. Watt track for sure. Now, I mean, you got to get some defensive players of the year, but when it comes to importance to the team, production, when it comes to the leadership piece, when it comes to, you know, fans loving you, he's on that track, man.
I'm glad you brought that name up, because I know there are going to be some that think I'm aggressive, and some of you are going to tell me I'm wrong and you disagree with me. I will not come off of this, though.
Hold on, so
okay.
I think the way that I am viewing Will Anderson is changing. And that name you brought up is the range in which I am starting to judge him. Because he had the year he had last year. He got the accolades that he deserved last year. But then he got paid like this. And when he gets paid like this, you've got to perform to the level and exceed the level that you performed to last year. And I know a lot of people will listen to this and say, come on, no. You, like, when they make the decision to do what they did with Will Anderson, who deserved every bit of it, they didn't pay Will Anderson, and that's the great part about him. They didn't pay Will Anderson because they think he's reached the ceiling. They paid Will Anderson because they think this is the start, and he is going to get better. And I'm glad you brought up J.J. because I'm thinking the same thing. J.J. Watt in 2014, you guys will remember, set the market then. He became the highest paid defensive player in the sport. And you know what he did that year? He then became an All-Pro Defensive Player of the Year and was second in the MVP. Now, I'm not asking Will to be second in the MVP, but I mean, he had 20 and a half sacks and said, okay, that made sense. The next year after it, 17 and a half sacks. Defensive Player of the Year again. First team All-Pro right after he got his money. And they paid him to get better than he was. That is how I am viewing Will Anderson this year. That the version of Will we saw last year, which was amazing, 12 sacks, which was a career high for him, 85 total pressure, second in the NFL. He was fantastic. He needs to continue to even get better when you start to look at, and I know Nick said he doesn't look at the percentage of what players are taking on the cap. Mm-hmm. But now we start to look, he has taken up a heavy percentage on the cap, and he has to exceed to me what he has been doing the first 3 years.
I mean, $50 million a year you gotta produce, right? I mean, there's no doubt about it. But here's why, you know, I'm super comfortable and super confident putting his name in the same sentence with J.J. Watt, is because I think both of them's game, it's very hard for their game to fall off, right? Obviously, Father Time takes its toll and
or injuries,
you know, whatever it may be. But when you look at how they got, you mentioned the not outliers, but you mentioned the part that really made him defensive player of the year, 20 and a half sacks, right? When you put up those kind of numbers on the defensive side of the football, and you do what I'm fixing to talk about JJ did and Will did, that's when you move into that defensive player of the year MVP conversation. I don't know that Will's gonna get 20 sacks. And I'm not saying he's not. I'm saying I don't know. Why I'm comfortable putting Will Anderson in the same sentence with J.J. Watt is because I believe their game is going to continue to be dominant because it's multifaceted. This J.J. Watt had 20 and a half sacks, but what made J.J. Watt defensive player of the year was the fact that he was so good against the run and so disruptive, he commanded double teams and triple teams. Right.
And got 20 and a half sacks.
And bingo, that's the defense.
You don't even have the double teams to deal with because of that nut on the other side.
Right. But the thought of like, okay, what are your expectations for Will? My expectations for Will is be in the teens in sacks. I do expect it to be better. I don't need it to compete with Michael Strahan and Myles Garrett's records, right? It'd be nice, but you don't have to. But what I expect is get after the quarterback in let's say a top 10 manner in the league. But also continue to impact the game versus the run. Continue to make highlight reels when the ball's ran away from you and you chase down a back. Or when the quarterback bails the pocket, you retrace and you go push him out of bounds for a 2 yard. Like, continue to be a guy that is one of one in the league that plays with that kind of energy, right? Continue to be the guy that's one of 10 guys in the league that impact the game every single snap, whether it's pass or run. That's why, to me, I'm comfortable going, this dude's on the same track that J.J. Watt was on. If he can go out there and throw up a 20 sack season, then you better believe it, he's going to be in Defensive Player of the Year talks.
Oh yeah, right? He was in it last year.
But he's going to be well worth the money if he just continues to go out there and affect the game, impact the game the way that he has to date. On every single snap. I love Danielle Hunter. I love Danielle Hunter. I don't believe Danielle Hunter impacts the game every single snap the way that Will Anderson does.
Tyler, let me ask you something. Because I hear what you're saying, and I think many people around the league will say that. How many, like, in your mind right now, you think about Will Anderson, you think about how they've committed to him and what they've made. I'm like, he makes more than Micah Parsons, Myles Garrett, Patrick Surtain, all of them. They've thrown him up there. If you were just off the top of your head, how many sacks would you in your mind say, all right, I think, because Clint, you know as I know, when people get paid like this in that position, there is a numbers position, right? There is a production level.
Well, they typically, that's what they get paid for.
Yes. In your mind, how many sacks are you expecting a Will Anderson to have
for those checks he's cashing? Double digits for sure, probably 12-13 range.
Really?
At the bottom, like minimum.
He's got to have 15 sacks for me. Like, we got now obviously we got to see how this thing works, but a big thing, like, Myles Garrett did not have help last year. He had 20 whatever.
Bad MF-er.
JJ didn't have not no Danielle Hunter help. Like this, like he has to, and I do think there is a potential of, hold on, man. I don't know if 12 gets it. I think it is again, depending on how he does it, but I think there's going to be expectations, especially from the fan base. I mean, we've seen how quickly many of you have turned on Siege. But there's an expectation. Like, at that position, when you're making that kind of money, that you have a certain... Someone just texted in, you're out of your mind. I don't know if I'm out of my mind. 15 sacks? Oh, no. Yeah, it's got to start there. He's making $50-plus million. He's got Danielle Hunter on the other side.
Woo! Love that money.
Yes! Hell yeah! He's got 17 games.
Yeah, look, I think he's got to be in the teens. I mean, we can go back and forth.
Of course,
forth
I
about
won't
the...
fight him if he gets 14 and yeah. a half. But I mean...
So, I mean, you're talking about 2.5 more sacks than he had last year. Very
next line
doable.
Coming in 16 at least, 17, one yeah, per game.
But that's not what they paid him for. I mean, I agree with it. If you're going to make $50 million as an edge rusher, that's not what they paid him for.
Now, that's a part of a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of it is
you know, there's more than sack.
What's that?
He does more than get sacks for that defense.
He's a pillar in the building. I mean, they paid him for far more than just sacks, right? But the reality of it is you to Cho's point, you do if you're going to be a $50 million defensive end edge rusher, you got to go get after the quarterback in a again at least in a top 10 manner, which is going to you got to be in the teens to get there. But the interesting thing about the actual sack number, one, you know he's sharing them with Danielle Hunter, right? I mean, that ultimately is Danielle's beating him to the punch sometimes. But you know, the other piece of that is I would argue that if this offense shows up and is worth a damn and gives these guys an opportunity to play with a lead every now and then where the opponent has to throw the ball, where the opponent has to get uncomfortable a little bit and go, hey, uh-oh. We got to throw the ball or we're going to have a hard the CJ and him just threw up 28 points, man. We got to go chase them, right? If the offense plays worth the damn and can score some points, I don't doubt that he can flirt with 20. The problem is they're going to play every game. If at all possible, they're going to do everything they can to play every game tight to vest where teams are still going to be running the football in the fourth quarter. It's going to be a three-point game, one possession game, one way or the other, and – in the fourth quarter, it's going to come hell or high water. Teams are not going to put their quarterback in harm's way and drop him back consistently and put their tackles on islands. If this offense can force the opponent to put their tackles on an island against this crew, he can flirt with 20.
Yeah.
I just wonder how many times that's going to happen.
Text line coming through the 12 to 13, but if he tops the league in run tackling, quarterback hits – hurry, stop focusing on sacks. It's elementary. Okay, yeah. All right. Okay. Oh, okie dokie. All right, man, you go pay Nico big money like that. Yeah, man, boy. Hey, man, you see how many times he got Noel open? Yeah, he's supposed to get Noel open, and he's supposed to go for 1,200 yards and catch touchdowns.
Yeah.
Because that's correct. I'm just saying, Tyler, you know fans. Tyler's a professional fan, mostly. You know fans.
Yes.
Once you get paid a certain amount of money, all that stuff shifts on you real quick. And you see, they paid him, as Clint said, that's why I said there's a conversation. They paid him as much as being a pillar in the building as they did for his skill set. Right. Miles Garrett got paid because that mofo can ball. I don't know how much of a pillar he was really in Cleveland in the locker room. But you knew he was going to come out there and produce. And I'm just saying, he may be a pillar in there. Tyler, let him roll in there with 11 sacks. Let him roll in there with 10, 11 sacks. There is going to be and him be missing in some of these games. There's not going to be an exception of he got double teamed. There's one thing when Clowney was getting that he's getting double teamed thing. Yeah, he wasn't making $50 million on the team.
Yeah.
A year. Yeah. So we can roll here. He's going to have to produce. Or I'm telling you, some of these Texas fans, I promise you, we will take calls and read texts and conversations of where the hell was 51 in a way that you hadn't done before because of that change. And I think it's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, two things. I think Myles Garrett, what makes what Myles Garrett just did this past season so unbelievable is he did it on a crappy football team. I just mentioned how much easier it is to rush the passer and get sacks when you're playing with a lead. I didn't watch every Cleveland game, but I don't think Myles Garrett played with the lead very often, and he still broke the record. The other piece is, I think, and this is going to go against kind of your point, Ron, of like how many he needs. Right? Like I think D'Amico in this defense looks at it. They're more interested in what we saw last year when Daniil and Will were both the best 1-2 punch in the game, but they were both at one point in the top five in the league in terms of sacks. Now I think Will obviously got left behind, but they were definitely both top 10, right? But that's the point, is if both of those guys can get up into double digits, if both of those guys are in the top 10 in the league in sacks, then I think they're going to be sitting just fine.
Nope. Somebody just checked in. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I changed up how I viewed Deshaun once he got paid.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he's gonna need. There's gonna have to be a good high level of visible production,
right,
from him when you make the money that you're making.
Mike, head said 16 plus next year.
No, I hear you.
If he's healthy,
yeah, he plays 16, 17 games. 11 ain't going to do it. Say that right now.
We don't Thomas, like that. 11, 12.
11 or 12.
No, that 11, 12. 12 ain't going to get it.
I said 12 or 13.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You want to check.
It did slide.
It sounds better when I say 11, 12, though, when I pile on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. It does sound better. I suck.
So stick to the plan here, Tyler. to the plan. It's 11, 12.
Hey, let's take an interesting way to look at this division with the Texans, the AFC South. How will this thing go coming up this year? We'll do that as we continue right here live on The Drive.
95.7 The Fan presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in. I want to try my hand. D-Mill's best bet's coming up a little bit later on, but I want to try my hand a little bit in here.
You got to be lying.
Strong emphasis on little.
Let me try it again. At least the conversation surrounding betting. About that. From the text line, who cares about Will's production? If the team wins, advances, and makes history, who cares? Okay. All right.
Hell, if that's the case, let's just click this thing over to National and let's go on vacation. Let's hit this Labor Day weekend. Get this Labor Day weekend started. Right, man. Who gives a rip if they give CJ 50, man? Just win, man. It doesn't matter.
Y'all seem to care about winning 12 games and CJ in that game, even after the Pittsburgh game, y'all seem to care, even if they won.
Hold on, Joe.
Get out of here. You are a lying and true fan in you.
I like that saying. That's a good one. That's two today, man.
It ain't in you.
I was kind of dragging.
Would you
my
say you're a lying? A truth ain't in you.
Yeah, you're lying.
I'm writing that down. Hey, I've heard that before, but it's been a minute.
Words of wisdom.
Yeah, okay. Someone said it's like, come on, man. It's unfair to compare him to JJ. Listen, I'm not telling him to be a 3-time Defensive Player of the Year. I am comparing him year in and year out. He is the highest. Only quarterbacks make more money than him in his contract. Where he is, jumped him over. Over everybody, from Myles Garrett to T.J. Watt. Somebody texted in earlier. T.J. Watt got 20 and a half sacks in 15 games or 14 games once. He has passed up Micah Parsons, and he deserves it. And he should be in the conversation with the way they have compensated him. He should be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year the next 5 years, every year. He should be an all-pro. Every year, if he's healthy. That's J.J. Watt expectation. The hell with that? No. I am flabbergasted.
Here's just to be clear is, you know, I think the – to be even mentioned in – for me personally, to even be mentioned – in the J.J. Watt conversation, you have to check two boxes immediately. The alpha, the leader off the field, the way the fans, you know, adore you as a player, the way you connect with the fan base, you know, that intangible piece, both as it pertains to leadership on the team and in the locker room, as well as the intangible of connecting with the community. Will's got both of them already.
Yeah, he's right? Got it. Check.
And the other piece is having a motor that allows you to play relentlessly for 50, 70 snaps, however many snaps you go. I don't know he's not playing 70, but however many they ask you to play, to literally leave it all on the field and play with an unbelievably high motor and never quit, affect the game damn near every snap versus the run and the pass. You know, that box is already checked with Will. He plays the game just like J.J. Watt from that perspective. Like, the only thing that we haven't seen from Will is the stuff that gets you Defensive Player of the Year, which there's only one of those in the AFC, right?
In
the whole league, right? So, I mean, at the end of the day, like, that's the box that's – can you go get 20 and a half? Can you go – have a year where you get 18, 19, plus you tip a couple of balls to your damn self and you end up scoring a touchdown on an interception, right? Can some of the sacks that you get be like, who was it against last year when he sacked in the end zone and recovered
Sam
it for the touchdown?
Sam Darnold. Highlight Tyler Blake
yeah.
coming in.
Yeah. So, I mean, like that, putting all that together, like those high end, like freak plays and crazy, like that's the part that he's still got to reach if he's gonna have a career like JJ.
And the part is he's capable of it, and that is what you should.
I think the 20 sack season or the 3 or 4 touchdown season or the offense putting you at tight end and throwing you a bootleg touchdown. Like, to me, those are all like one-offs.
Yeah,
like
I'm not talking about that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. You've got it. Like, in order to have that, but I'm saying, like, in order to get to 20 sacks, like, you got to play the lead every now and then, right? So, and I'm not piling on the offense. I'm just saying, in general, like, the season has to go in a way where you play with a lead and you get a chance to actually rush the passer when you know they're going to pass the football. The game has to go in a way where, you know, your offense is willing to put you in at tight end and throw you a touchdown every now. Like, those kind of things are one-offs of kind of like, maybe they happen, maybe they don't. We'll see. It's kind of like other people have to do things a certain way for those opportunities to present themselves. I don't know if he's ever going to get there. But the boxes that he checks right now, the type of dude and the type of player that he is right now, I don't have any problem saying he's on the track, the J.J. Watt track at this point. I think when he speaks, I think people listen. I think he's the undisputed leader of that defense, old or young. I think they listen. He's got the sway, if you will, of JJ. And so I'm there. I ain't got no problem with that comparison.
No, yeah, it's the next level. He's got to play production wise, everything wise. He's got to be in at least the area that he is right now. And you then would hope he jumps up and improves, which I believe he is totally capable of. He is. We talked about this with Amen Thompson yesterday. He is somebody each and every year has improved. You can see he's improved his game and he's improved his numbers every year.
The arrow's pointed up.
That's the next one. I'm going to talk about 15 seconds. Come on, man. Yes. Yes. Yes, I said it. That man's making $50 million. Yes, 15 sacks is a fair expectation for somebody who don't get double teamed all the time. Yes. No, I love pressures. I love hits on the quarterback. That position that gets paid that kind of money got
to
finish it.
You mean they didn't pay him 50 to set the edge?
Yeah, they paid him 50 to set the edge. And then set that edge and come around that corner. And he needs, like, what we watched from him, because he's capable of it. We watched him terrorize Josh Allen like he did the last couple of years.
You know, as we're talking about it, Ryan, the crazy thing is, you know, there is a Defensive Player of the Year type of run, I think, in Will Anderson potentially. And you got to be given the – we talked about – you got to be given the opportunity, right? Well, if you want to jump on the scene and get started off the right way, play Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and Dak Prescott in the first month of the season and have big games.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Have sack fumbles and big time plays against those quarterbacks. That's one hell of a way to start. So the opportunity is going to present itself in that first month of the season. Yeah, stage line, is going to be big.
Text line BS. You just said Myles Garrett did it on a crappy team. Yeah, he did. It was harder.
Yeah, he set the.
Yeah, it's harder. I think I we'll see what he does this year. We'll see the quandaries that teams are when they face the Rams this year.
Yeah.
and the guys, they could slide protection, help in every manner. Nobody else scared them on that. I think if he can do that, I think Will should be expected to do that, especially.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, look, we're talking about, like, even with JJ, like, you're just talking about one of the best defensive players.
Yeah.
To play the game. And the yes, he had monster years in statistical categories that typically garner awards. But what made JJ so special was down in, down out, inside or outside, he was an absolute force versus anything that an offense threw at him. And that's Wheels. Like, when you look at Myles Garrett, like, Myles Garrett is going to go down as statistically the best in a season anyway. But he's going to go down as one of the best just straight pass rushing defensive ends to ever play the game.
Yeah.
Like, that's not who Will is. Like, that's not why Will Anderson we're even having this conversation. That's not why he was an All-Pro last year. Right? That's not how he's going to go get a defensive player of the year award. Right? It's going to look totally different. I mean, you're talking about a true defensive end, hand in the dirt, just rush, bend and rush the passer. And Will's defensive player of the year, if he ever gets, is going to look different, just like JJ's look different.
Coming up, Danny Cannell. College football is not just going crazy on the field. It is obviously going crazy off of it. We'll hear from him as we continue right here live on the Drive.
95.7 The Fan presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back as we are here live on The Drive, and we are joined by our guy. It's good to hear from our friend of the show, Danny Cannell. And remember, Danny Cannell can be heard on College Sports Radio's Early Read weekdays at 6 a.m. on Sirius XM Channel 84. Also, remember, you can hear us, 95.7 The Fan, wherever you go on the Sirius XM app. Check out SiriusXM.com/sports. And pass for more details on how to subscribe to SiriusXM's all-new sports plan. Danny, good to hear from you, man.
What's up, fellas? How we doing, man? It's that time of year, you know, when I get to catch up with you guys. It's college football season. And I know we got a little taste last week and last night. But, man, the full slate Saturday is finally here. And I'm tired of talking about court cases and eligibility and, you know, all this Protect College Sports Act. I want to talk some ball, man, so I'm fired up.
Man, we're fired up too. So let's talk a little bit about LSU and the SEC situation. All right, hey, are they just simply, how far is this going to go, right? Are they going to play tomorrow? Or is Lane and LSU really going to potentially do this?
Man, this is a crazy game of chicken, right? I mean, these are two high-speed trains coming right at each other, about to come crashing into one another. I am shocked that it has gone on this long, right? You know, we saw Texas Tech try to make the stance for Brendan Sorsby to protect their player. They had no one on their side, right? No one was really willing to say, Texas Tech, you feel bad for Brendan Sorsby. It was pretty clear. He bet on his own team when he was at Indiana and Cincinnati. So, no one felt bad for that. The one difference in this, like, Lane does have some people on his side, being the player-friendly coach that's looking at these players. And it is a situation which is so unfortunate because the NCAA totally screwed this up. And so I'm sure he's got people in his ear and attorneys. They're saying, hey, we can fight this thing. We can win this. And I think that's why we are where we are now. To your question, We'll find out tonight because he's got to put out the roster. Nothing would surprise me. Like, if I was a coach, I'd be like, this isn't worth it. Like, we're not talking about a star quarterback or a star wide receiver or a star pass rusher. We're talking about a couple of role players. Now, this is, they add depth. You've got a backup tight end. You've got a defensive lineman. Those guys, those positions aren't hard to find. But that's what's kind of surprised me is that Lane's been willing to go to this length for a couple of kind of role players, depth pieces. Ultimately, I think he'll back off and say, you know what, I can wait. We can fight this in the courts, keep seeing if I can get total clearance where there's zero doubt if we're going to get harmed at all. I think he loves the attention this brings to him and it brings to the program. I think he very much is in the camp of any publicity is good publicity. But I have to think when it push comes to shove and they come right about close to that collision, that he'll call off the dogs and he'll say, you know what, let's wait another week. But nothing would surprise me if Lane tries to take this thing and says, we're playing them no matter what. That wouldn't shock me. I just think there's too much money and too much at stake when you think about LSU's playoff chances and possibly having games revoked from them. I think he'll back off at the last minute.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Danny. I think it's the old Jerry Jones approach. All publicity is good publicity, and money ain't a problem. And they can – I mean, right now, like you said, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, Lane's coming across as the ultimate – players coach right now, and that's going to play well in the only area that matters in the transfer portal and in recruiting moving forward. And so I'm with you. I don't think that he actually plays these guys and risks whatever is the risk associated with it. I don't think he ends up doing it. Hey, what about just college football in general? This is the first time that we've had you on. We have seen 2 weeks of college football, but no big time matchups yet. What's your take on the top 10 and who the powers are this year across the landscape of college football?
I don't know if it's just me, Clint, or everybody out there, but like every single season, there's a lot of groupthink, and we all think we know about every team. Last year, I predicted Clemson and Penn State, who were both in the top five, to play for a national championship. They both had atrocious seasons, even though they both had returning quarterbacks. They had stability. You know, you had Penn State look like they were on a breakthrough year. Clemson looked like Dabo Swinney was going to be back on top of the college football world. Until they weren't, and things fell apart fast. I think there's more parity in college football, and I have to keep reminding myself this. I think ever you could make a really strong case for any team in the top 15, I think they're going to be a playoff team. But we know that's not going to be the case. So I kind of look at this, and I'm like, where can I pick apart some of these teams? All of them have subtle flaws that you can find, but that's the thing I'm most looking forward to, because then that presents opportunity for teams that we didn't know were going to be very good. Whether it was Indiana finally, we knew they were going to be good, but I don't think anybody thought they were going to be a national champion going into last season. So I'm kind of curious to see what teams emerge, but I'm going in with a little bit of trepidation saying, I think there are some really good teams, but I definitely realize that there's going to be a lot of 9-3 and 10-2 teams. The days of running the table in college football and just having a perfect resume, I think those are long gone. Now, there are a couple in Texas Tech and Miami and Notre Dame. Their schedules are pretty light. But even with those teams where it's really hard to find the upset, one of them is going to get clipped, and maybe all of them at some point that we didn't see coming. That's what makes our sport great. I mean, just go ask Rutgers last night. They were a 4-touchdown favorite. They lose to UMass. Absolutely no one predicted it. So that's what I'm excited for, is just kind of the uncertainty of the college football season.
Danny Cannell with us. Remember, you can hear him on College Sports Radio's The Early Read, weekdays 6 a.m. on Sirius XM Channel 84. Listen, usually around here we're talking to you about Texas A&M or the Longhorns, and there is conversation there because there are high expectations. Both of those are top 10 teams. But around here also, there are a lot of Houston Cougar fans who are really excited about this team. You mentioned Texas Tech just a bit ago. Mm-hmm. Are you looking at Houston as serious contenders to make a college football playoff?
Absolutely. I think they're very serious contenders. I'm a big believer in Willie Fritz and the job that he does as a football coach. You saw that. Maybe one of the quietest 9-win teams last year was what Houston did. And I mentioned week 3 because when I look at Texas Tech's schedule and I try to find a spot for an upset, I see the Houston Cougars coming to town. Now, if that was in Houston, I'd feel a little bit better about it. Lubbock's a great, spot, great home field advantage for them. but I think they're built for this. And Connor Wegman is one of those quarterbacks. So I'm, you know, A&M fans are very familiar with him, but he found a second chance and he's got an opportunity to go there. And he does, he makes the most of it last year. And how about Willie Fritz pulling in one of the highest recruits at the quarterback position that he's already alluded to will play with Connor Wegman. So I'm excited for Houston. He's always got a physical team that, you know, on the defensive side of the ball will be really well coached and they'll play a little bit with an edge. I think Houston, everybody's talking about BYU and Utah as that second best team. I think Houston is very much in that conversation towards that upper third. And if they play as well as I think they could, they absolutely could be there playing in the Big 12 championships, Big 12 championship when it's all said and done.
All right, Danny, what about the other two in the state here, the two top 10 teams, the Texas Longhorns and the Texas A&M Aggies, man? Just your thoughts on those two squads, the quarterbacks, and the potential college football playoff run.
So I'm more bullish on Texas, which shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, everybody in the country is kind of more bullish on Texas, even though A&M already made the 12-team playoff, right? They did it last year. When I look at A&M, I know they have some pieces to replace. I'm curious to see what the offensive line does. The biggest question mark for me is Colin Klein, you know, losing your offensive coordinator, who I thought did a phenomenal job with Marcel Reed. I do like that they stayed in-house with Holman Wiggins there, you know, becoming the new offensive play caller. But I'm kind of curious. Last year within the SEC, Texas A&M had one of the easier draws. This year, we know it's not. And I didn't love the way they came limping down the finish with a couple losses to close it out, including that home loss against Miami. So very curious. I think they'll very much be in the mix. I think they'll be, you know, 9-win team, 8-win team. But to ask them to run it back, I think might be a little bit tough. And then with Texas, man, I do look at Texas and I say, if this isn't the year for Sark, when's the next opportunity you're going to have with a quarterback that's generational talent like Arch Manning? And clearly they feel the same way, going out and spending in the portal, bringing in guys like Cam Coleman, who is not that far off from Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State, from getting in a depth at backfield with Hollywood Smothers and Malik Brown. We already know what they're doing. And I thought one of the biggest, more significant moves this offseason was bringing in Will Muschamp to run the defense. Not that I had anything against Pete Kwiatkowski, but Texas really didn't play that much with an edge. Will Muschamp, you know, he coaches angry. He coaches with an incredible amount of intensity. I'm curious to see if that plays out on the defensive side of the ball for Texas. But I am a believer in Texas. I have them going all the way to the national championship game this season, which I told you my prediction earlier. Probably means they're going to be 7-5 at the end of the season. But we'll see. I'm a big believer in Arch. Because he went through the ups and downs last year, I feel more confident he'll be able to handle a bad game or two, which I think every quarterback is going to go through this season. I always look at who bounces back, and Arch showed that in a big way last year with the scrutiny he was under.
Hey, Danny, when I was with the network, we did a spring event with South Carolina when Muschamp was down there, and I watched him MF a defensive lineman for about 50 yards because he didn't run from one drill to the other, and his parents were standing right next to me. I said, golly, Muschamp. I mean, mom and dad's got to listen to this, huh? Hey,
talk to me. That was a different era, though. Now that kid would have been in the portal like within five hours. That kid would have been in the portal.
Yeah, I think he'd still be in the portal because I'd be honest with you, I don't think he's worth a damn. But talk to me a little bit about Arch real quick. When I watch Arch, I mean, obviously he does some good things and there's a high upside there. But to me, every time I've watched him play, Danny, it seems like everything is so damn hard. I mean, I watched one of the worst defenses in America last year in Arkansas make him. Now, he had a hell of a game, but he made it look extremely difficult. I mean, if grass stains were still a thing, his mama would have had a hard time getting him out of his pants. I mean, it was like, that's got to change if this guy's going to win a national championship, if this guy's going to be a number one overall pick, right?
I think so, too. Yeah, he's got to be cleaner. He's got to be more consistent throughout the season. It's interesting because I do think, you know, if you watched Eli play, I mean, Eli was kind of like that. So was Peyton to some extent, but I think he's more – maybe a little bit more closer to Eli in the way he throws the football. The good news, he's more athletic than any of them. Like, I mean, he's definitely got that quickness. And maybe I'm buying in too much to the finish of the season, but when I watched maybe his cleanest game against Michigan in bowl game, and it's hard to take away from bowl games kind of, you know, too much because you don't know what you're getting out of both teams and if Michigan mailed it in. But I thought that was his cleanest performance of the year. And I thought maybe one of his best moments was Mississippi State, which was a defense that was not very good, but they were down in the hole, down a few touchdowns, and he comes roaring back. But to me, it is about the consistency from the start of the game to the finish of the game. And much like we saw with Eli, he was all the kind of hit or miss throughout his career. It's a little bit the way it's been with Arch within the season, within games. He's going to have to play cleaner. And the one thing I know from Texas, I think they have a chance to be the first 9-3 team in the playoff. Their schedule is brutal. It starts with that week 2 game against Ohio State. They got some tricky spots. I think they could drop some games, but I think they could be similar to the Miami Hurricanes last year, who snuck in at a 10 seed and then made it all the way to the title. I think Texas sneaks in as potentially a 9-3 team or a 10-2 team, but the ceiling on this team, if it all comes together, that's where I'm a believer. And, of course, with Arch, I think the ceiling is about as high as anybody in the country because of the intangibles. But, yeah, when you watch the tape, it's a little bit up and down, and sometimes it does look a little bit dicey. And if that offensive line doesn't perform well, it could be a long one, and we could all be wrong about Texas and Arch Manning for sure.
All right, Danny, have a good time tonight, this weekend, as college football is underway, man. We'll talk to you down the line.
I love it, man. Great catching up with you guys. Let's do it again soon.
All right, that's Danny Cannell. Again, remember, you can hear him, College Sports Radio, Early Read, weekdays at 6 a.m. on SiriusXM Channel 84. What you got coming up?
Hey, if you kids out there doing all that pouting, Hunter Brown gave us a new phrase. Ron just hit me with one. It's been a great Friday. Great Friday. I'm adding to my arsenal of phrases. I'll tell you those two next. And that damn Bill Belichick, boy. Man, if them wheels ain't come off since Brady left town in New England, if you didn't think they come off already, they're coming off as we speak. I'm going to catch you up on that. What an absolute mess at North Carolina. We'll cuss and discuss next.